There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the fangirl zone.
Welcome to the Mudhorn Clan cast on the Fangirl Zone. I am Sean Fangirl-F.
I'm Steve.
And this is Beskar Dave. Yeah, I had to remember my own name. Sorry. Today we are talking about Episode 9, Season 1 of Andor, titled Nobody's Listening, written by Bo Willimon and Toby Gilroy, and directed by Toby Haynes. They couldn't get a third Toby to get involved with this?
Yes.
Toby has done it again. Okay, so I'm back. I made it back from, I don't know where I was.
The outer rim.
Yeah.
It was rough out there. I don't think it was even named. But let's talk about initial reactions for this episode of Andor. Dave, what do you got for me?
Wow, it's another excellent episode. Even though not a lot happens, like, action-wise, a lot happens anyway. I love the world-building fortress planet, or the planet they were on before, where they had the heist. And I actually like the inside of the prison, too, because, you know, it just gives more of a chance to explore the characters that are introduced in all these scenes. So, yeah, I thought it was great. I would, if we are rating it. Oh, we're going to save this, right? We're doing ratings at the end? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Then I'm going to save it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it, Steve.
Yeah, I thought it was a good episode, too. Loved how the prisoners started to panic once the rumor mill started cranking up that
good reason.
Yeah, the whole second level was gone. Like, uh-oh.
How do we fix this? Oh, I know.
You don't.
We'll just eliminate everybody. Wow.
Well, the Empire doesn't care. We've learned that.
Yep.
I enjoyed this episode, and because I was gone, we had to catch up. We had watched from the heist happening all the way through this one. Oh my gosh. When you watch them all together like that, it just has this incredible movie feel.
Right.
What is happening? So I was like so into it. I'm like, wait, that's it? Crap. I was confused. I have to ask you guys this though. Was the prison thing where they went underwater or was it above? Because when we first see it, I felt like it was going to go underwater, but then when we see them in the tunnels, I'm like, or the bridges, I'm like, are they underwater or not? Like, I couldn't quite tell.
I don't think you can tell, but I always assumed they were underwater. And then
right.
Those whirlpools, you know, swirling about it, has got something to do with cooling, whatever it is they're using for energy there, I guess.
I was just wondering.
Just into planet destroying, you know?
Right.
I'm thinking, like,
that wouldn't be a shocker.
How are you going to try to escape if you're underwater? It's, like, way harder, so that's why I was wondering about that.
Yeah, they'd have to go to the top deck or whatever and get a ship out of there.
I'm sure that's super easy.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we'll find out soon.
It's looking that way, that's for sure.
Poor Andor. He'll put out a call where he is, and Vel and Cinta will answer it and try to kill him.
Yeah.
Like, you can kill me later.
Rescue me first. So,
all right.
Episode recap in 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
Go, Steve.
Under the unblinking scrutiny of the Empire within a high-security prison, Cassian must serendipitously work to plan his escape. The Imperial Security Bureau keeps digging for answers on Ferret.
I was so upset for him, though, with this. It's like, I'm a tourist. It's like, damn, don't vacation anywhere now.
Yeah.
Next time, stay on your beach blanket. So there's really nowhere to run for most of our heroes, and nobody's listening. This episode of Andor oozes with shameless evil of the Empire as its loyalists find more unconventional ways to shake out anyone who stands in the way. I found it interesting, too, or not ironic, but nobody's listening. That would include the Senate.
Yes.
And
oh,
the Karn,
my gosh, yes.
And the Karn home. You know, Cyril could say anything. The only thing his mother would absorb is what she wants to hear.
Yes.
So the facade is almost completely stripped away. as her true ugliness across the Star Wars galaxy is exposed. In Deidre Miro's world, she is the main character of the story, the Imperial Security Bureau officer, terminating her way through the witnesses she needs and has finally reached Bix Kaleen. Not Bix. The help of a mad scientist, human experimenting Dr. Gorth. Wow, he found the right job, that guy.
Yeah.
On hand like a toy for her, she really can't play good cop at all after offering an almost thin as the lips lie not to torture her if she simply confesses what she knows. Yeah, yeah. Well, how does Bix know?
Yeah.
Bix, knowing better, calls Miro out. She wouldn't believe her anyway. True. Almost too giddy behind the eyes, which Gao's performance really brings across, our Imperial girl boss tells Bix she's about to pay the same price as her friend Salmon Pak. Miro shares that she knows him better at this point than Bix does. In this sessions with Dr. Gore, she found out he attended a separatist meeting 2 years ago where he met a woman who said it was serious about politics. He would want to serve as a liaison for Ferrix. Have you heard the rumor that that was probably Kayla? I mean, Kayla, right?
Who's
Kayla? Works with Luthen?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought she said he was calling her Leia.
No.
Oh, it's
Kleya. I'm like, really, there's no other name?
Kleya?
Yeah, Kleya.
Okay, Kleya then. That's what I've heard. When he got back, he was sent to a factual radio until Bix, a unit that Bix had been using. Though she figured out this woman was more interested in using Ferrix's unique commercial position to acquire stolen Imperial equipment. Pak was paid to keep the radio alive, something Bix didn't know. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Like a cat playing with her food, Miro wonders why Bix would play a role as a business owner with no political affiliation. Well aware that Miro is just screwing with her, Bix gets one jab in, calling the ISB officer the worst of the worst, and tells her, just get on with it. Ooh, maybe not the best idea.
No.
Miro caps her monologue by summarizing what she intends to get out of Bix. More on Cassian Andor's relationship with the buyer, full account of Imperial parts she's passed along, as well as who she got them from, who was bribed, and where they went to. Oh, yeah, so I'm sure she's got all that lying around.
Right, yeah, in her head somewhere. Nah, a list maybe, but that's about it.
If you remember.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even remember what I bought everybody for Christmas last year. So
the thing with the Rebellion is that you need to compartmentalize all that information so you can't give someone else up. Hopefully that's true of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the whole point, especially because they're not exactly organized very well at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pak told her Bix had at least 6 face-to-face buys, and so she intends to unfurl the nest of relationships that led to Andor and the buyer meeting. Now, I was thinking about this, and like, it was a different face every time.
Yep.
You know, like, you could have just said that, and like, maybe it's a morphling, you know, mess them up.
Yeah.
Bix tells her the truth in regards to what she knows of the buyer. He comes, he buys, he leaves. Well, she's not lying. That's boring for Deidre. So she, as Bix knew she would, starts to torture. And oh my god, that doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor creepily pipes in that the torture isn't physical. Like that somehow is supposed to make it better. Like, okay, good, you're not touching me, but... And goes on to excitedly share the disturbing story of how they discovered it. Essentially, when the Empire got hostile pushback by a sentient species on an outer rim moon called Dizanfrey, the Dizanites were massacred to make way for the Imperial Refueling Center. And I don't remember ever hearing that planet before. Anyone?
No.
No. Okay. They've introduced a lot of new stuff that is part of the universe.
Their deaths were recorded as proof of the mission. What a bunch of psychos. And it was discovered that as they died, they made a choral agonizing pleading note.
Good lord.
The sound drove supervising officers into some sort of madness induced by the traumatic pain it was transmitting, like the
empathic,
thank you, sonic wave of death felt by those who they killed. Wow, I can't talk. That's real messed up. And to make it way worse somehow, Bix's torture is specifically using the sound of the children dying. Oh, thanks, Doc, for really stressing that. It's like, the more you listen, you know, the more damage it causes, as he puts on the headphone helmet device. Why does this, like, make you feel good? Because it was like, you see Deidre basically like, The more you listen, the crazier you'll be. What the hell is wrong with you, you psycho? Bix is immediately in agony and screaming. By the end of it, she's sweating, puppy-eyed, but kept alive because she knows how to identify Axis. The only one, as far as we know.
Right.
So they won't kill her, but, oh my god, can I just say, you know, when they're like, well, what do we do with the other guy? Oh, pack, whatever. The Imperial officer, I would say guard, whatever, we should hang him as an example. Dude, you are way too excited about this.
Yeah.
You got issues. That's all I'm going to say is you got issues.
Yeah, kind of like the first two officers that Cassian killed in episode one.
Like they sent the craziest of the crazy out there. What the hell?
Yeah. So back in prison, Andor has been proving his craftiness with his team to make sure they don't get fried. In showing kindness by picking up slack for the eldest in their group, Ulof, who is so close to release. Sure, 40 yeah. shifts, that's all. That's a month and a half. Come on.
At 12 hours a day, I'm like, oh, God, I hurt thinking about it.
Yeah. As they work, Andor takes a quick potty break, and we get to see him chip away at a metal piece hidden behind a slat. Even in space, we can't escape a Shawshank reference. When he returns, a new prisoner is lowered through an elevator platform and tortured with a stick. A sight that gives Andor reason to wonder how many guards there are on each floor.
You think I should send him a poster of Farrah Fawcett?
Yes. At the Senate, Mon Mothma stands with those in opposition to the Emperor's Imperial overreach. She sees it as an all-too-predictable march toward complete unchallenged authority and affirms their duty is to protect to the people first, the second to protect power of the chamber, and she's met with boos and people turning off their lights. Truly surprised, nothing was thrown at her.
Blasted.
Yes. The episode's big twist, which on second thought we should have seen coming, is that Mon's cousin, who suddenly arrives at her embassy home, is none other than Vel.
Why didn't I
did
guess
not
that?
Know that.
Yes, I know. We should have as soon as we saw her on Rich. Coruscant all dressed snazzy.
Rich girl.
Yep. The rebel, just as Cinta said, reacts to her high-class life to clean up like the rebellion is a festival she can take a break from. Which is not to mean she's not fully in it, as her function requires her to blend in. She tells Mon that her travels have been worth it, as her cousin expresses apprehension over her disappearances. But Vel assures her the rebellion comes first. Mon admits she thinks they're in over their heads, but Vel holds her steadfast, reminding her that they took a vow.
Now she's hardcore.
I love the be a spoiled rich girl line. Because that makes sense now when we see the interaction she had on Cassie
and Donnie.
Homeworld. Yeah. It's like, oh, that was a low blow.
So back on Narkeena 5, the prisoners continue to communicate through sign language from afar. Andor tries to interpret it as resistance to being locked up, and Kino says not to talk about escaping. Andor, in desperation, voices that no one in the power cares what they say. They just show up. Clock in and turn on the electrified floors to keep everyone in line. That sounds boring. They're cheaper than droids and easier to replace. That was a killer line.
Yes.
They don't care to listen. They're there to put in a minimal effort and pick up the bodies if they drop. Wow. If the bodies hit the floor. And Deidre continues to be the hero of her story as she updates Partagast that she's got all the intel she wanted from the good doctor's sessions with Bix. Everything but one thing, the identity from the buyer known as Axis. Interesting to note that this episode contained nearly a hair on Luthen's wig, but his presence was felt as the reason why everyone is being pulled through the ringer. Deidre figures Axis runs a tight ship as well as one large enough to not only rely on one network or supplier. At least Bix gave up a list of every piece of gear that came through Ferrix. They think they have a match to targeting unit recovered from a safe house operated by a rebel cell associated with Maya Pei, who was called a neo-Republican in last week's episode. Also a new character, too, as far as I know. She also knows Andor returned to Ferrix 3 nights after Aldani with money in his pocket, noting he had shaved. That connects him to what They know about the Aldani rebels as two soldiers from the garrison identified him as clean-shaven. Spartacus asks about Andor's mother, but Deidre explains she's too old and fragile to bring in for questions better suited as bait. That's taking it for granted, too. I mean, you don't listen to the prisoners like, oh, we can't get anything from Grandma.
Okay. Right. And Grandma's thinking completely opposite.
Right. In a startling turn of events, the prisoners continue to feel restless as new travels from other levels of the incident that seem to sweep down and rattle everybody. As the lines communicate, they realize the two levels were completely wiped out without a warning. Ander reminds Kino that the guards don't care and they're not getting out. Kino, beginning to crack, tells him to shut up and keep his head down. Some impressive eye acting between Circus and Luna, you get that Kino is getting what Andor is putting down.
Hey, we had helmet acting in Mando. Wow.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
excellent helmet acting. No, I just figured out in Stargirl who's the cloaked figure down in the basement of all the TVs. It's Luke Skywalker.
Oh, is that? There you go. He was bored for a while.
He just had to put his VCR or DVR on pause so he can handle a different show.
Yeah. Dr. Doom, probably.
The delight that is Edie returns with another Keeping Up with the Karns breakfast moment. Oh my god, I will tell you the other episode that started with the one dude, like, looking out the window. I'm just like, wow, this douche. And then you can see why.
Yes.
Because she truly is the Kris Jenner of Star Wars universe. I wish there were more kids for her to boss around because the sheer cruelty in which she regards her son Cyril is too iconic. And once he presumably dies, or I don't know, she does, maybe she'll go Sith at this point, who knows? That is, if he doesn't go off and marry Deidre and eventually father someone like, I don't know, General Hux? What? Wow.
Yep.
Fanfic suspicion aside, Edie notices that her boy looks good and wonders why. By accusing him that it's clearly not because of the job he's ungrateful for, leading to some awkwardness about her digging through his private box. Yeah, I was like, oh my god, this woman.
Yes.
I cook two meals a day. It's like, oh, that's cereal, honey. You ain't cooking squat right there.
Yeah.
Cereal box. Have you seen the clips of the actress who played Edie on YouTube?
She does no.
A lot of stage. Oh, my God. Is she talented? She does song and dance and everything else.
Wow.
Yeah, check it out.
But in here, she's so creepy because she all but says, oh, it's another woman, isn't it?
It's like, incredible transformation.
Your mom. Chill. Then we get the most scathing quote in this episode. Edie calls him the shadow of a son, a tenant, a stranger. Like, what if I died? I was like, oh, let's lay on the guilt.
Yep.
I'm familiar. What is the deepness that cuts through right through the screen? Always in awe of the way that Catherine Hunter delivers her lines, because we all felt that. In response, Cyril slurps his cereal, his blue milk, and tells her he's been promoted. And suddenly, attitude changes, and Edie's tone turns to pride like nothing happened, and she wasn't snooping, and yada yada. And suddenly she's a doting mother. Maybe she perceives the threat of a new mommy Deidre in his boldness. Oh god, that would be creepy too.
Yes.
On that road. Please, don't she's ever like make me read anything like star. That again.
She's like his personal Death Star in high heels.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over family dinner with Mon, Perrin continues his streak of just being the worst. He grills Belle about getting on with finding a husband and says that at this point she should just marry a widower. Now, I thought this was interesting and I didn't think anything of it at first, but when he mentions that they had been married at 15, as was custom,
right,
before they even came to the Senate, it's like, oh, okay, so things were way different. Just like it was kids who were the queen, and, you know, going back, it's like, oh, okay, this makes a little more sense, but it's like, what the hell is wrong with you? I mean, it's not like she's, you know, 80 years old.
Right.
But things get spicier. Yeah. As he notes that so many Chandrillion, I can't say that. Did I do it right? Chandrillion.
Yep.
Has suddenly appeared on Coruscant, like, hey, and daddy's, you know, girl, Lita, oh, swear to God, this girl, puts her mother on the spot by calling him, oh, mother's old boyfriend, which Mon deduces that she got from her dad.
Yep.
Oh,
Her little attitude. You know what would fix that? A nice little pop to that mouth.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm sorry. She had an attitude. Or a nice trip to the Outer Rim, whatever. Stay there for a while. Away from Perrin and Lita, Mon tells Val to be a spoiled rich girl for a while. Remind everyone that who she is in order for her to keep her protections in place. Since Mon's money was already kind of blocked, maybe Val needs to keep her stuff rolling.
Yeah.
Mon lets her apprehension show and asks her cousin, what have they done? And Val reassures her, they've chosen to fight against the darkness. Wow, that was so, like, deep. Juxtaposition of that moment is Bix still being held captive and shows that how deeply impacted by the tyranny everyone is, and they just don't have the luxury Val has. That ability to escape, to get somewhere safe. Even the rebel deals with intersectional inequalities, showing the disparity between the allies in high places and the marginalized on the ground. Well, we see that soon enough changes, but not quickly enough.
No. So back in Deidre's Imperial Gore power arc, she crosses paths with the lovelorn Cyril, who has gone full obsessive over her.
Holy crap, he was creepy there. Like,
yes, he was.
I thought he was creepy before. Oh, like, yeah. Wah.
He tells it wasn't easy to find her. He straight up stood in the same spot outside her building for days. Deidre's all, I don't have time for this, but he insists on thanking her for what she's doing, that by being in her presence, he's realized life was worth living, and there was justice and beauty in the galaxy. Whoa, buddy.
I half expected her to walk away and have, like, a weird smile on her face, though.
Right.
But at the same time, Deidre, there's no handrails anywhere.
No.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
And as she pushes him away more and more, the more he's into it.
Yeah.
With Deidre's penchant for being horny for torture, I can't quite decide if she's into it, because at any moment, it's as if they're about to go, all kiss me at the fountain of the ISB. Weird. Yeah. But it's also plausible she's not about his creepy incel take on John Hughes' romantic gestures, as she threatens to have him arrested and put in a cage if he tries it again. But she doesn't. So, is she just flexing her power over Cyril and edging him? In any case, she has bigger people to fry. Her team has found a rebel pilot using the stolen Imperial masking unit Luthen was selling in the last episode at the destroyer off Stierguard. Saw was right to pass it on. Yes, he was. Partakaz goes intel on the pilot from Antonio Krieger's squad, and he says there's a raid planned on the power station at Spellhaus. Deidre suggests they stage killing the pilot and stage their death on the ship. The savagery speaks to her horniness, but in space, apparently no one has sex. Still, the tension is laid on thick. Speaking of that kind of tension, Mon and Tay meet up to chat about further donations getting complicated, and yet they don't let things be complicated among them in the way we wish. Let Mon have some joy.
Lord.
Tay tells her trouble's on the horizon for her hefty financial withdrawal unless she works with Dave Skulden, a wealthy Chandrillian thug who knows she's in the hole. He wants to meet her in Coruscant, likely a trade for a better reputation.
That's when the alarms start going off in her head.
Yes. Even Mon's not real happy about it.
No.
Now back in the Kena, Olaf collapses and a Meg tech is sent down. The tech insists on not knowing Olaf's name, as Andor and Kino insist he should be saved. He only has 40 shifts left. But the only dignity the tech offers is a quick death. After he tells the guard he's with to fetch a body bag, the med tech tells them no one is getting out now. And with that, Kino finally answers the Andor guard's question. There's never more than 12 on each level. Well, let's go Star Wars Prison Break.
I thought it was interesting with this, because he's like, no, he had a massive stroke. And he finally tells them, like, yeah, the one guy went to level 2, and it wasn't a mistake, but they're saying it was a mistake.
Right.
Like, it didn't matter if this dude had one shift left. This is probably the kindness for him. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
That was rough, like, yeah, hearing that. Especially going back to the beginning when Cassian was actually, I don't want to say harassed, or, but it pretty much was. But it's like, you're awful sweaty. Well, it's hot out here. And then it's like, I'm a tourist. It's like, oh, man, bad luck. This used to only be 6 months. Now it's 6 years. Wow.
Yeah. Like, in 6 years, never going to happen because you're going to be dead before then.
Sean, you think it's a mistake that he transferred him back to his old group? Or not a mistake? They just didn't get anywhere because they don't care?
Yeah, they're just moving him and thinking that he was far enough away that nobody would notice and they think he was crazy or something.
I'm still convinced it is a mistake, and they just don't care so much.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
The guy came back, and maybe they rebelled when they realized nobody's getting off, and they had to kill him?
Yep.
Or, because there's no word getting off that system. I mean, how are they going to get out word to the outside world? So, I don't know, I guess they rioted? So
yeah. Just
set the floor on fire, I guess.
Yep, more than likely. That's what happened.
Two things you don't want to see. Well, I don't want that helmet put on so I can hear everyone screaming, and I don't want to be on that floor.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, I need socks. My feet are cold. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, just get him the socks. Sucker. Okay, let's get into some Easter eggs. Episode 9 names some familiar Star Wars locations. A lot of different people and places are name dropped in Episode 9, but most of them, including Steergard's Bellhouse, are new locations first mentioned in this Disney Plus TV series. That is true. For all that's the case, though, there's mention of the Separatist meeting on Jandara, probably a misspelling of the name Jandora, a planet name dropped in Star Wars The Old Republic. Or it just developed from there. More interesting is the nod to Kathrine, a key location in the Imperial era. It's even been officially placed on the Star Wars galaxy map in a sector of space known as the Expansion Region, deeply scarred by the Clone Wars. The Ring of Kathrine is a mining colony situated in the asteroid belt in Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Cassian Andor himself finds his way there and learns of the existence of the Death Star from an informant. Also, the relationship between Mon Mothma and Bell is similar to Bo-Katan and Satine Kryze. Episode 9 finally reveals the truth about Bell Sartha, the rebel operative who led the mission on Aldani. She almost screwed it up when she got there. I can't do this.
Yeah.
Seems she is, in fact, Mon Mothma's cousin, although she's choosing to take a more militant approach than Mon and has signed up with Luthen. The relationship between Mon Mothma and Bell Sartha seems reminiscent of the dynamic between Satine Kryze and her sister Bo-Katan in Star Wars The Clone Wars. Mon Mothma has no idea her cousin was involved in Andor's Aldani heist. Oh, wait till that one hits the floor.
Yeah.
Luthen's decision to bring Cassian Andor on board for the heist has left the nascent rebel alliance dangerously exposed. Boy, they don't know what they have. He's actually in prison.
Yeah.
Not only has Cassian seen Luthen's face and traveled on board his personal ship, he also worked with Mon Mothma's cousin. Luthen hasn't even told Mon Mothma about this, meaning she has no idea she's facing potential exposure from a different angle. It's a good thing she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Episode 9 adds more depth to what we seem to be one of the greatest themes in the Galactic Civil War. The Empire doesn't rest, Mon, Bell tells her cousin. We take what's left. Crumbs. The rebels will only defeat the Empire at great personal cost, and Bell has embraced the darkest side of the rebellion, launching terrorist attacks that she knows will cause the Empire to overplay its hand. Yeah, that's one thing she's learned from Luthen.
Yeah.
Show that to Saw Gerrera, too. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Mon Mothma's cost is more subtle, showing that when Bell walks away, she leaves her cousin alone. She effectively lives a double life, allowing the Empire to portray her as an ineffectual do-gooder, even as she secretly finances a rebel alliance. This role cannot last, of course, already because Mon Mothma can sense the net tightening. Andor will presumably tell the full story of Mon Mothma's personal rebellion. By the time of Star Wars Rebels, she's forced to leave Coruscant, traveling the galaxy, preaching opposition to Imperial overreach. That's a good case scenario. It's likely the rebellion will cost Mon Mothma all her relationships. There's not a downside to that.
Yeah.
Your dog, that the husband, he's not going to be sympathetic. And Bell never mentioned before in Star Wars canon, meaning she can be expected to pay the ultimate price. You think so?
They were so Empire-centric. Yeah, I don't think she'd be too hurt.
So that means Mon Mothma will indeed be left alone. Oh, that's so sad. Imprisoned in an Imperial labor camp, Cassian Andor insists the prisoners can communicate freely without fear of reprisal, simply because nobody's listening to them. The importance of communication is a subtle theme in Star Wars because it is consistently portrayed as important in the fight against fascism. dialogue parallels Cassian's fate in Rogue One, a Star Wars story. He will ultimately die for the rebellion alongside Jyn Erso, but this time the entire galaxy will hear and act. According to Star Wars, fascism dies when people listen to one another and respond to what they've heard. Pattern can see to be running through the sequel trilogy with nobody coming to Leia's help in Star Wars The Last Jedi and the entire galaxy turning up to defeat the Empire in Star Wars Rise of Skywalker.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Finally, there are interesting parallels between Bix's torture and Darth Vader's interrogation of Leia in the first Star Wars film. The same kind of shot as a door descends. Yes, the foot of someone marching away. That was pretty cool. Episode 9 actually shows the methods of the Empire used to torture people. However, and it reveals why they are so successful in doing so. It underscores Leia's strength of will. No doubt, the Empire has created even more brutal torture methods in the 5 years after Andor Season 1. Unlike Bix, however, Leia did not break, and indeed, the suffering she endures appears to have served as the line that forged her, the fire that forged her. And there's one more thing I'd like to add. It's not necessarily an Easter egg, but everyone's dysfunctional couple. Cira and Deidre that everyone's shipping, or seems to be.
Right.
I want to see them get together, too.
No.
But I just want to, if they do get together, this is what I'd like to see. I'd like to see them, that sounds a little sick, die and embrace as like a presage to when Andor and Jyn Erso die, too.
Right.
And it's kind of, it'd be kind of ironic. These two finally get it, embrace each other, but die for their cause. And in Rogue One, we see Andor and Jyn Erso die for their cause. So let's see if they actually go there.
Right.
How many more episodes do we have?
Three.
Do we have? Okay.
12 in season one and 12 in season two.
So, hey, you may get it, Dave. You may get that moment.
Well, if they they don't have to get together in this season. Maybe next season.
Right.
And still, leave it with them embracing and dying. I know that sounds a little sick. But, it happened in Rogue One, so.
Yep.
So, now we can get to ratings.
Yes.
Go ahead, Sean. Do you have a rating for us?
Oh, my gosh. This is a good episode. So, I will have to say 4 out of 5 copper-colored skin-tight dresses. It fits.
Yeah. And I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 gruesome tortures.
I'm also giving it 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5 Death Star Valentine's.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Star Wars podcasts out there. The Big Galaxy. Tell your friends, and I hope you're enjoying our podcast, and don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
We have so many you can check out, like maybe the Marvelous Postfoot podcast, for example, because you might like some of the stuff we're chatting about. And you can go over to www.fangirlzone.com, check out the podcast page for all of the podcasts we have, and check out the contacts page for all the ways to get a hold of us. And FYI, we are not paying for, a blue check mark on Twitter, so you're just going to have to find us via our regular Twitter while we're on there before they kick us off for not paying $8 a month. But for this episode of the Mudhorn Planet Cap,
I'm Steve. You come near me again, you pursue any of this, and I swear I'll have you in a cage on the outer rim.
I'm Sean Fangirl-S. I'm telling you, no safety rails anywhere. There's got to be a lot of accidents on these planets. Saying.
This is Beskar Dave. If I wanted to be Deidre's stalker, would I have to listen to 100 children dying? No thanks.
Wow. At least she's not like, oh, I listen to it every day. It's so soothing. It's like, what the